Paul Emig, our Green Gold analyst, now joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Paul, so I guess give me a first and foremost your gut feeling about tonight's ballgame.
Well, the Packers are in for a major challenge. I don't know if there's a road environment more difficult than Seattle. I mean, even when this team is not the team they were a few years ago, which they're clearly not, it's still a really difficult place to go. It's even more difficult when you pretty much have, well, less than 48 hours for the Packers between the time Sunday's game ended and by the time they're flying out to Seattle on short rest. You pretty much got, what, about 90 minutes of practice time in between that period, and it was more of a walkthrough type thing on these short weeks. So you're playing more on instinct. You're playing more on previous preparation. I know Mike McCarthy talked about he was already game planning for this game last Thursday, you know, leading into this past Sunday's game, because you had to plan ahead. I think the problem for the players is, yes, physically it's just as difficult on the Seahawks as it is on the Packers. And, you know, we can have the once-a-year conversation that we have about should Thursday Night Football even be a thing. I mean, in a league where they're claiming that safety first, it's pretty ridiculous that I think they make these players turn around on not even 96 hours rest and have them go play another game. I would put all of that in a basket, Bill, and say, but they need this win tonight because, yes, you have like a little mini bye week after this before you go to Minnesota in a game that could very well dictate the top of the NFC North this year. And, yes, the Bears currently control it, but I think as things get tighter, we'll see if that Chicago team responds, you know, who hasn't been in the thick of a playoff race in a while, whereas the Vikings and Packers have that recent experience. Tonight's game is pivotal, and it's going to come down to, I think, more of the mental preparation than it is anything. And when you look at some of the guys, keep in mind, this was a Packers team, Bill, that 3 weeks ago we were touting just how incredibly off the charts healthy they were coming back from the bye. Now you have no Nick Perry, no Kevin King, no Randall Cobb, no Kentrell Bryce. You've traded Clinton Dix. You've traded Montgomery. You know, you've released Whitehead. The team that was on the field 3 weeks ago coming back from the bye is depleted comparatively based on injuries and based on some of the trades and other transactions. So it's going to be a tough game, and I think they realize that, you know, to use the word must win would be to imply that their season is over if they lose. I don't think their season is over if they lose, but they are in a deep hole that would probably, well, not probably, would take a lot of help, external help that they can't control. The Bears would be able to, you know, quote-unquote control their own destiny more, and so would the Vikings if the Packers lose this game tonight. So a huge challenge both from a mental preparation perspective and because it's difficult for the human body to respond after an NFL game that quickly and that short of turnaround rest, especially when you're traveling from central time zone all the way across west, which makes this even more difficult.
So I'm looking at this game, and I said a couple of things I want to see. I want to see a clean four quarters, obviously, if you got to win the turnover battle. But this is the first time I'm thinking to myself, if they play a clean four quarters, they'll win this game. But I just don't know, because a lot of the things that I have seen have been self-inflicted. It's not like teams are just beating up the Green Bay Packers. A lot of this is self-inflicted. And I start to wonder, you know, if it's easily correctable, then why isn't it corrected? You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. And it's like, okay, yes, there's a situation with Ty Montgomery running the ball out of the end zone. And, you know, he's obviously was a fourth-year player. I was going to say a younger player, but a guy with less veteran experience. But look at, what was it, week three that Randall Cobb had that really bad game with two drops plus the game-sealing fumble. Randall Cobb, you know, eighth-year player, been around the block a lot, experienced, veteran guy. What happened this past week? Tremont Williams fumbled the ball on a punt return. Like, you know, it's one thing when it's your lesser players, your younger players that are making those kind of mistakes, but it's, I mean, when Tremont Williams and Randall Cobb are coughing up the football in critical moments, you know, who can you trust if you can't trust those guys? So, yes, a lot of this has been self-inflicted. You know, and some of it, you know, you go back to early in the season, it's probably been 2 months nearly since we've mentioned, you know, all the early season stuff with Clay Matthews and the sacks that aren't sacks because of roughing the passer, that, you know, the NFL seems to have gotten a grip on how to handle those things, and it hasn't been a discussion around the league recently like it was then. But in a way, even though I don't think those were, at least, well, the one on Trubisky that Matthews did was certainly a penalty, but the ones that followed weren't. But whether it was those penalties, whether it was the fumbles, whether it was really, you know, Rodgers playing at a very average level among NFL starting quarterbacks, and maybe even average right now is statistically incorrect. He's actually been below average in a lot of categories. The fumbles, the self-inflicted stuff, the, you know, Ty Montgomery reportedly, depending on what you want to believe, not listening to the coaching staff and running the ball out. It has been self-inflicted, Bill. Yes, they've gotten beat up a couple times to better teams, but a lot of the case, a lot of the times, because they are throughout the game doing things that just Super Bowl contending teams, playoff teams, let's not even go so far as about Super Bowl contender, that playoff teams don't make, and they have had a lot of those already this year.
Give me a thought on Aaron Rodgers. He seems like even at the game against Miami, he came away a little bit frustrated. He's working with a lot of young guys here. At what point is the realistic expectation that suddenly they become same page people?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, Bill. And I would say that if there's one thing that, you know, people who followed the Packers closely, especially during their run from 2010 through 2015, 2016, learned about Aaron Rodgers, is that if you look up the stats, when he was pressured, when he was blitzed, he ate defenses alive. That was like, that was kind of the problem with game planning for Rodgers, is like, if you send pressure, his passer rating is better. You're better off keeping your guys in coverage and kind of hoping for the best from a 3 or 4 man pass rush. Now, and I saw that somebody at the 105.7 FM fan station retweeted, there was a stat from ESPN yesterday that showed what Rodgers' missed throw percentage was under pressure this season, and it was the third worst in the league. So now you have a quarterback whose mobility was limited for much of this year, and I think that definitely has a factor or an impact into that number, because he was just, you know, with the brace on his knee and everything else, he was certainly limited. But there's been some throws where, you know, you can go watch the film or you can see some of the stuff floating around Twitter, and there's just passes that are uncharacteristic, whether pressured or not. But anytime you see the name Aaron Rodgers in a category of missed throws, not incompletions, right, but where, you know, where he, on his own volition, just straight up misses the mark, and you see him in the top three category of quarterbacks when pressured with bad throws, you know something is off. And yes, there's game planning things to talk about, and there's scheme things to talk about, and there's definitely, to your point, of chemistry with the wide receivers that needs to be learned. And you can't learn that overnight. You just learn that with game reps. And for as great as Valdez-Scantling has been this year, and for as many flashes as, you know, Equanimeous St. Brown has had, this is a team that, you know, Randall Cobb has been injured more than half the year. Jordy Nelson is in Oakland, in misery in Oakland.
Right.
You know, so there's, aside from Devontae Adams, even Jimmy Graham, who was, you know, who I would say has underperformed to expectations, he's also new to the team. So, like, most of the time when Rodgers is throwing the ball, it's to guys, when it's not Devontae Adams, to whom he's not familiar with. So it's some chemistry stuff, it's some scheme and game plan stuff, and it's also just Rodgers, a guy who's always been terrific, like otherworldly when he was blitzed or pressured, who's missing throws in those situations now that he never had before.
Up front, defensively speaking, I went back and watched some of the game film. Mike Daniels, Kenny Clark, it seems like teams are basically saying, we're going to concede a few guys on that defense, stay away from them, and everything else is pretty much fair game, which is part of the reason that Mike Pettine has been successful in bringing pressure from different areas. But is it they're not getting the statistics, Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels, that most would say be impactful. But the play in the trenches has gotten significantly better. Do you know what to make yet, though, of, say, Kyler Fackrell and company? Some of the guys that we've been kind of waiting on them to develop, and they haven't come on as fast and as furious as I think as we wanted them to. But Kyler Fackrell, Dean Lowry, Montrevious Adams even showed up in the stats last week. Do you think that these guys are just now starting to fortify a defensive front that is desperately needed, or do you think that these are still misses by Ted Thompson and they're going to have to go out and continue to try to fortify that in the offseason?
Well, let's start with Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels. I think Kenny Clark, you know, who's all of 23 years old, he's a third-year player who came in the league really, really young, and really physically underdeveloped because he was so young. He is arguably a top three interior defensive lineman in the league. You don't have to take my word for it. You can take any of the advanced key metrics, and not just Pro Football Focus. You can look at any of the analysis that's out there that shows the value of an interior defensive lineman. And if there's any position in football difficult to appreciate, it's usually interior defensive line because of the job that they're asked to do. Kenny Clark is a beast. He's just really, really good. And that is, you know, among a lot of huge misses in Ted Thompson's recent drafts, Kenny Clark is a huge hit. Mike Daniels is having a good year. He really hasn't had, I don't think, that huge breakthrough moment in the last 2 years that I think some people thought was maybe coming when he was so good in his fourth and fifth year that maybe he would kind of elevate to Aaron Donald status. And really that's become Kenny Clark, who's elevating to that Aaron Donald type status. The stuff about Kyler Fackrell and where the pass rush is coming from, I think people look at this team and they say, 31 sacks? How do the Packers have 31 sacks? Wait, Kyler Fackrell leads the team with 5 sacks? When did this happen? And a lot of it, there's a couple things to it. One, when you do have two interior defensive linemen as good as Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels, you are creating a lot of one-on-ones on the edge. That's where Kyler Fackrell can take advantage. That's where he has taken advantage. And I think if we talk about, Bill, I remember this was going back to training camp, and Mike Pettine was asked about the edge group. And he said a couple complimentary things about Matthews and Perry. He said something complimentary about Reggie Gilbert. He kind of had like almost, I forget exactly what it was, but it was more of a throwaway comment about Kyler Fackrell. And I think most people kind of assume, I mean, we talked about how Kenny Clark came in the league at age 20. Fackrell came in the league like darn near 25 years old. I mean, he came in as an older, much older
right.
player than most. I mean, he's like a year younger than Randall Cobb, and they've been in the league 5 years. Well, Cobb's in his eighth year, Fackrell in his third. I mean, there's a big disparity there compared to when most players enter the league. So if he wasn't going to do it at age 26, you know, what made you think he was going to do it at age 27? But he's performed well. And the question I come back to, Bill, is, okay, Nick Perry is out tonight. That means more snaps for Kyler Fackrell. Are the Packers better off, worse off? Is it a neutral thing that Fackrell is going to get Nick Perry's snaps? Because not just by the fact that Nick Perry is making $12 million this year and Fackrell's making, you know, something of the 100,000 variety because he's on his rookie contract. I think the Packers are better off right now with Fackrell on the field compared to Nick Perry. And that says a lot, I think, about how poorly and invisible Nick Perry has been. And it says a lot about the fact that Fackrell, when he gets his one-on-one matchups, and as he did this past Sunday, is winning them occasionally. And Reggie Gilbert, I think, compared to his preseason expectations and how well he was playing, I think Gilbert has underperformed. Clay Matthews has had his ups and downs. I think if not for those early season things, his numbers would look a lot better and people would reflect better on it. But Nick Perry hasn't been good. Reggie Gilbert has mostly not been nearly the guy he was in preseason and training camp. And that leaves Kyler Fackrell to, there you go, as your leading sack guy. But, again, I think a lot of that from the edge and from the corners is some of it is Mike Pettine's scheme. Some of it is because Mike Daniels and Kenny Clark are doing so good on the inside, which is freeing up one-on-ones on the outside. And there is certainly credit to be due to Fackrell because, again, going into tonight, I think the Packers are arguably better off than they would be if Nick Perry was out there because Nick Perry has been – just throw $12 million off the cliff because it's been a waste of money. It's been a waste of snaps, and Fackrell might actually provide some spark compared to Nick Perry.
Let me ask you this. Next year, the cap hit for Nick Perry is $14.7 million if they keep him on the roster. It's $11.1 million. If they cut him, they would owe him, which means they gain $3 million in cap space. But the likelihood of them just giving a guy $11 million to go away – man, that's a big chunk to chew. That's not something the Packers would traditionally do. They usually wait for that year when you get a little more relief. Now, in 2020, they would get about $7.5 million of that back, or $7 million of that back, as opposed to getting, you know, all but, or they get $11 million of cap relief in 2021. So my question, I guess, is do you see them actually cutting Nick Perry and paying him $11.1 million to go away next year, or do they keep him one more year and then cut him loose?
Well, I'd have to go back and look at those contract numbers again. I know you just quoted them, but I recall when the contract was signed that there was some sort of out clause after 2 years that would have resulted in significant savings for the Packers in 2019. The way you're saying it is that you'd only free up $3 million. Are you on SpotTrack?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look at that again, Bill,
yeah.
Because I seem to recall there was more of a savings than that, so I can't speak to it obviously right now. But
he gets $4.8 million in 2019 on the third league day. He automatically gets the roster bonus, so you would save the roster bonus, and then you get a little bit of money back.
Yeah, there would be some. I think there was some dead cap money that they'd have to incur, but
right.
You know, again, if. You know, even Kyler Fackrell, who'll be on his fourth year of his rookie contract next year, and Reggie Gilbert on a rookie contract, an undrafted rookie contract, you know, I guess it depends how aggressive Brian Gutekunst wants to be in free agency and how much he wants to reform that edge group, because you're already either having to choose between re-signing Clay Matthews or losing him for nothing in free agency. And I just, you know, it's such a hard spot because they don't really have anybody in the pipeline ready to take over in the edge spot. If Matthews is gone, if Perry is gone, you know, are you going to go into next year with Fackrell, Reggie Gilbert, and whoever you draft?
Right.
Unless, of course, Brian Gutekunst gets crazy in free agency, which is, you know, it's not what Ted Thompson would have done, but Gutekunst has shown aggressiveness. So, yeah, it's a big puzzle for them to solve, because that edge group, not only is it not very good right now, there's nobody in the pipeline ready to come up and really take over next year when Matthews is gone, presumably, and when Nick Perry remains a question mark.
Yep. Good stuff, Paul. Appreciate it, man. I know we're late, but thanks, okay?
Yeah, no problem.
All right, pal, talk to you later. There you go. That's Paul Emig, our Green and Gold analyst, joining us for a couple of minutes on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider hiring drivers right now. You work hard, they treat you fair. 80-plus years, I've been going to get done. Call them 844-PRIDE to go to schneiderjobs.com.